Morning, everyone. I'd like to call this Board of Supervisors meeting to order. The date is November 15th, 2013. The time is 9:01 a.m. I would please ask everyone to please stand, and I'm going to ask Ed Burrows, who's our stand-in county council today, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ed. Going to move on to public comment. This is an opportunity for anyone to speak on any item that is not on today's posted agenda. And I'm going to see if there's a public comment card or it is a public comment card. Yes. Isaac Montenegro. How are you doing? I'm sorry.
Montelongo. Yeah, thank you for allowing me to speak. First of all, I'm going to be speaking about the closure of the pharmacy for the county. I'm very, very grateful for the time I've been able to work here.
If you're going to speak, you're going to speak on, because we have an item coming.
Okay.
During the public, public hearing, and that would be the right time to speak on the pharmacy issue.
Okay, so just hold on.
I'll call you up. You'll be the first speaker. Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Harper, and I currently actually reside in Modesto, California. I've upgraded into an address and have been very blessed for the last 2 months. The same agenda items are on the table, though. I can request that everybody Google the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. We need to speak with each other with respect throughout the community. This is an effort to stabilize our community, county, city, and actually the entire state at this point. But currently, in the last month, my first month in my new address, I have somebody attacking me in the alley that I take to access my address. They were there first, and it was a territorial thing. It's like we have to figure out that everyone fits in this county just because they're here. They don't need permission. Our social ladder goes above and beyond, God willing, the fact that everyone is a human being and we all fit in the community. We don't have to compete with each other to be living somewhere or going to lunch somewhere at the Arby's restaurant on Stanford Avenue. I've been 86 from there after a few citizens caused a huge scene. They were drama and called the police on me again. Now, this used to occur on the buses frequently. So I'm going to back up just a little bit. On 8-1, one of the bus drivers grabbed my backpack, demanded that I do what she told me to do, and pretty much practically gave me a heart attack in the wheelchair. I decided that day to go buy a vehicle, which I bought a van. So I paid $1,800 for a vehicle that doesn't function. I'm going to have to chop shop it now because we don't have any kind of conscience in some areas of our community. So I just want to encourage people to stabilize our community and county by trying to upgrade as soon as possible. We've got some serious issues on the table with larger pictures. So you want to, each individual can make the effort to do things the way they're done, be respectful. Even if you disagree with somebody, your issues are still important, but you still have to be respectful with each other and stabilize our community. Otherwise, it's going to disintegrate. And I want to encourage everyone to go vote today. You can make a difference just by showing up at the polls. And thank you again for all of your effort. Some new faces, priceless. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Harper, for reminding us to go out and vote today. Forgot that already. Anyone else for public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the consent calendar. The Those are the items marked with an asterisk, items A1 through 4, B1 through 2, C1. Would any Board of Supervisors like to pull any item? Anyone in the audience like to pull an item? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
A motion.
I'll second that.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Mm.
Opposed? Okay. I'm going to, it is past the time of 9:05. So I'm going to go to the scheduled matter, the 9:05 public hearing to consider a waiving of the second reading and adoption of the ordinance amending Title 16 of the Stanislaus County Code to adopt by reference the Stanislaus Code of Regulations. It's essentially the building standards. Steve Treat, how are you?
Good. How are you today?
Good.
Good. Thank you for having us here today. Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, CEO Risen, Council Burroughs, and members of the board. I am Steve Treat, Chief Building Official for Stanislaus County, and with me today is Denny Ferreira, Supervising Building Inspector. We're here to present to you the 2013 California Building Code adoption and request that the board adopt an ordinance amending Title 16 of the Stanislaus County Code and adopt by reference the CCR California Code of Regulations Title 24, 2013 edition of the California Building Standards. California Building Standards Commission is an entity within the California Consumer Services Agency appointed by the California Legislature to write building regulations. The CBSC develops the California Building Standards by amending the International Model Codes and publishing the amendments in a 3-year cycles to update building codes to reflect changes in the building industry and technologies for the state of California. The CBSC adopted the 2013 edition of the California Building Standards, California Code of Regulations, Title 24, on January 30th, 2013. The CCR Title 24 was published on July 1st, 2013, and then becomes effective on January 1st, 2014. Cities and counties are required by state law to enforce the CCR Title 24. This next slide shows all 12 parts of the CCR. These are all our code books that we go through and issue out all the codes for. Administration amendments. The CBSC does not adopt the administrative portion of the CCR Title 24. Cities and counties must adopt administrative elements by ordinance to include the 2013 California Building Chapter 1 Scope and Administration. The proposed ordinance amends the Title 16 of the Stanislaus County Code to adopt all 2013 CC&R Title 24 with exception of Part 7, which is vacant, and Part 9, the Fire Code. The Fire Code will be adopted by Modesto Regional Fire Authority here in the near future. CCR Title 24 are statewide mandates passed down to all local jurisdictions to enforce without funding. Staff is currently investing resources through training and purchasing of books to enforce and implement the mandatory measures in the least evasive manner as possible. Staff recommendations. Staff recommendations are that we find that the proposed ordinance is exempt under the provision of the California Environmental Quality Act pursuant to state guidelines section 15061B3. We waive the second reading of an ordinance amending the Title 16 Stanislaus County Code and adopting by reference the California Code of Regulations Title 24, 2013 edition of the California Buildings Code. Find that the proposed changes and modifications to the 2013 California Building Standards contained herein are necessary because of local climatic, geological, and/or topographical conditions as detailed in the proposed ordinance. Adopt the ordinance amending Title 16 of the Stanislaus County Code and adopting by reference the California Code of Regulations Title 24, 2013 edition of California Building Standards. And direct the building official to file the adopted ordinance and board's findings with the California Building Standards Commission and order the clerk of the board to publish the ordinance in accordance with Government Code Section 25124B. At this time, if the board has any questions, staff is available to answer any questions. And if not, I request the chairman of the board to open public hearing.
Any questions of staff or open the public hearing? Seeing none, I will open the public hearing. Opportunity for anyone to come up. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board for action.
Motion to approve.
Yes, I'll second it.
I have a motion. The second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Have a good day today.
All right. Being past the time of 9:10, we'll move on to the second public hearing pursuant to Section Code 1442.5, Health and Safety Code, to consider the elimination of the direct provision of pharmacy and oncology services and the authorization for the alternate provision of pharmacy and oncology services. This includes reduction in force, and so I will turn it over to staff.
Mr. Chairman, before you start, after consulting with the county council, I think it's best that I step down from this item. The reason is we do own a pharmacy in Riverbank. Although we're not what's called a 340B pharmacy, which you'll hear about, I believe, in the staff report today, we do accept Medi-Cal. And so, in abundance of caution, we do not think this is a legal conflict of interest, but abundance of caution, I'm going to step down so there's just not the appearance of any conflict of interest on this.
Okay, for the record, let it show that Supervisor O'Brien has left the dais. Marianne?
Good morning. I'm Marianne Lee with the Health Services Agency, and at the table with me today is Carol Dunbar, the Chief Financial Officer of our agency, and Dean Wright from the County Council Office. I'm here this morning to talk about some changes that we're proposing that have to do with our pharmacy and our oncology services and some policy changes with regard to the medically indigent adult program. We're going to talk about four different areas where we're proposing some changes. Two have to do with the way healthcare services are provided, so that's pharmacy and oncology, and two have to do with medically indigent adult program policy, one around eligibility and one around scope of benefits. This is primarily being prompted by the Affordable Care Act's Medi-Cal expansion and the health exchange coverage, both of which are being launched on January 1st, 2014. Okay, whenever we're looking at significant issues like these, you know, we certainly recognize that we're working with limited resources, we're stewards of the public dollars, and there are many considerations that go into developing a staff recommendation to you. What's before you there, it looks at some of those, and we look at, well, what's our obligation, what are our mandates, what's the business case for what we're doing or what we're proposing. Consider the healthy community priority of your board and look at impacts to the community, be that the patient community, our employees, or other stakeholders. I hope you'll see this threaded throughout the information that we're providing this morning. Okay, before I get into those four areas, I want to give a little bit of background. And I know this looks familiar to you. You know that all counties have an MIA program mandate. And it's a program for indigents. It's to be the payer of last resort for those that aren't otherwise relieved by some other source, some other program. The eligibility and scope of benefits of the program are to be established by each county's Board of Supervisors with case law guidance. This might also look familiar to you, similar to what I presented when we were looking at the health realignment options for the dollars the state's going to take back. The main point of this is to show the similarity between the MIA, the medically indigent adult population, and the Medi-Cal expansion. That while our MIA program has higher income limits, the Medi-Cal expansion goes up to 138%. But when we look at our MIA population, it appears that about 90% of our MIA enrollees have income at 138%. Or less. So come January 1st, they won't have eligibility to MIA. They'll have eligibility to Medi-Cal. So the first area I want to talk about where we're proposing a change is in our pharmacy services. Okay, so you know that effective January 1st, we're estimating about 90% of our MIA population will transition to Medi-Cal. 94% of the prescriptions that we have filled in our pharmacy are for MIA patients. In Medi-Cal, whether either health plan, Medi-Cal network, they work with a lot of pharmacies. It's a large network of pharmacies that are available to Medi-Cal beneficiaries. And HSA, our pharmacies, not contracted with the Medi-Cal health plans. But in the past, we were, and yet this excuse me, this patient mix wasn't much different. We believe that because of the convenience factor that Medi-Cal beneficiaries have in having access to so many other pharmacies, in the past they had self-chosen to use other pharmacies rather than ours. So if 94% of the prescriptions filled are MIA and about 90% of the MIAs are anticipating are going to transition to Medi-Cal, and we don't serve the Medi-Cal beneficiaries in our pharmacy, we're facing a tremendous decline in demand and corresponding revenue in a couple of months in our pharmacy if we don't do anything. So if we don't change the model that we have right now, what's the financial impact? We're estimating about a little over a $2 million shortfall, a new shortfall that we would have if we don't do something, and about half of that for the remainder of this fiscal year since it's starting in January. So the alternative that we're proposing, because we still have the MIA program, even though we're anticipating it to be many fewer individuals, we still have an obligation. We have to make arrangements for those individuals. We're suggesting that we no longer have a direct provision of pharmacy, so we would close the pharmacy and replace that with a contract for that smaller anticipated MIA enrolled population. We have been working with Walgreens, but we could contract with Walgreens one or more pharmacies. What we'd want to do is contract with pharmacies that have this pre-approved federal 340B agreement. And just to give a little bit of explanation about what that means, because our clinic system, our primary care clinics, have the federally qualified health center look-alike designation, it gives us access to this rather significant pharmaceutical purchasing discount program. And the federal government, through HRSA, the Health Resources and Services Administration, has pre-approved a virtual inventory kind of purchasing arrangement with pharmacies where an FQHC organization and a pharmacy can still enjoy those purchasing discounts for pharmaceuticals. So what we would do would be to contract with Walgreens, as we're talking about right now. We could contract with others that have that 340B arrangement so that we would still enjoy that pricing, that lower pricing level. This alternative would avoid this looming shortfall that we would have if we don't do something. It would add convenience for patients who today have just the one, that my patients have just the one option of our pharmacy. They'd have more locations. But the downside is that it would displace staff. When we have staff that work in that pharmacy that if we close. It's a difficult recommendation to make. We have some very long-term dedicated county employees that have worked in our pharmacy, and this would impact them. Unfortunately, we've been in situations like this before, and the county works very hard, chief executive office, the HR folks, working very hard to find landing spots for individuals, whether inside the county, whether vacancies, or even reaching out outside to try to assist and make us a smooth transition. As far as the detail with regard to the staffing impact with the pharmacy, if we close the pharmacy, we're talking about 11 full-time positions, 7 of which we're asking that you would approve a reduction in force and deletion of the job classifications, because without a pharmacy in the county, there isn't a need for those job classifications. So those 7 include 1 outpatient pharmacy manager who is a pharmacist, three pharmacist positions, and three pharmacy technicians. We'd ask that you delete three vacant positions. Two are administrative clerk, two positions that are filled but are that can transfer to other vacant admin clerk two positions within our agency. And then there's one pharmacy technician position that is already, that's been currently vacant. And then the last position would be an account clerk three position that we'd ask to transfer to HSA administration in our billing area to help with the need there. We are proposing that these changes be effective on January 11th. However, and this varies from the printed agenda item, in the work that we've been continuing to do day by day with the staff, there's one pharmacist that requested that the effective date be delayed by 1 week, January 18th, 2014, and it helps us in that it would ensure that we would have a pharmacist through the closure, where we have still the larger volume in for this the remaining calendar year, and it helps for that employee as well. Okay, the second area of proposed change has to do with our oncology services. Currently, we have a contract with Valley Cancer Medical Group, two local community oncologists, and they come over. It's a part-time clinic operation. It's 3 half-days a week, generally, and they provide evaluation and consult services at our specialty clinic there on Scenic, staffed with our staff. Because of the limited hours, though, the infusion services don't occur in our clinic. They occur over at Doctors Medical Center. What we're proposing is that with the same oncologist to be a contract change, rather than the model where they have their private practice and their patients and then they come over and they're in our clinic with our patients, that we would contract for them to see our patients in their private office instead of coming over. It would be more of a comprehensive one stop, only those where the care requires a hospital setting. Other than those situations, it would be more of all the care and treatment in their private office. We see this as being more convenient for the patients, more efficient for the oncologist, and frankly more efficient for HSA as well. Looking at impacts, when we looked at our last fiscal year, there were 190 patients in our oncology clinic, of which 50 we have the obligation, the mandate for, because they were on the MIA program. Again, going back to what we're looking at with the Medi-Cal expansion, after January, we would anticipate that the number of MIA patients requiring oncology would be quite a bit less, probably less than 10. For the other patients that are not MIA, the overwhelming majority are Medi-Cal, and the Medi-Cal network, whether regardless of health plan, the local oncologists that we work with are contracted with Medi-Cal, so it would be a relationship between the Medi-Cal health plans and the oncologists. Financially, it would be better for us. We're estimating on an annual basis about $500,000 better, and some of this is related to Medi-Cal reimbursement that is less than what our cost is in this model that we currently have. As far as staffing, the impact is much different than what we're talking about with pharmacy. Because it is a part-time clinic, it's the staffing to support that clinic operation is really parts of full-time employees. It's a part of a staff nurse. It's a part of a medical assistant, part of an administrative clerk, and the manager. And given the rest of our clinic services and other vacant hours, those staffing hours would just be absorbed in budgeted hours of our clinic system. Okay, now I'm going to switch from the proposed change that I do with how health services are provided to the medically indigent adult program policy. And you've already seen this slide. I wanted to start sort of underscoring that the MIA program is for those that are not otherwise relieved by another program. For instance, if an applicant comes in today, one of the first things that we do is to look at whether they have linkage to Medi-Cal, because if they have eligibility to Medi-Cal, it's not a choice on which program. If they have linkage to Medi-Cal, they're not eligible for the MIA program. Okay, so we've talked a lot about Medi-Cal expansion, but we haven't talked about the Covered California Health Exchange. So that's what I want to look at now. The health exchange, in terms of the income limits for eligibility, it goes up to 400% of the federal poverty level, and up to the 250%, there's both subsidized premiums and cost-sharing reduction, and then up to 400, it's the subsidized premiums. So if you look at those income limits and compare to the Medi-Cal expansion, Medi-Cal goes up to 138. In our program, recall that we have age-banded income limits. So at the youngest age band, we go up to 171%. The oldest age band that's eligible goes up to 279%. And all of those individuals, because they're over the point where it triggers to where a patient has enough income that they have a share of cost, all of those that are above that would remain on MIA would have a patient share of cost for the program. But now before we look at who's on MIA, there are other considerations that we have to look at. There's one really big difference in how Medi-Cal runs and how the health exchange is working. With Medi-Cal, the effective date, once you're approved, goes to the date of application. So retroactive to the date of application. The health exchange is not working like that. It's working much more like employer-sponsored coverage, where there's an open enrollment period, and if you miss the open enrollment period, you can't apply again until the next year's open enrollment period. The effective date doesn't go back to date of application. The effective date is at a future point, and it depends on when that application and approval takes place. If it's early in a month, then the effective date can be the first of the next month. If it's late in a month, it's the first of the following month. So it's a future point in time, and that's a big difference between Medi-Cal and something that has an impact on what we're looking at in terms of policy. Okay, so this slide just gives you a visual representation of the coverage options outside of MIA, where Medi-Cal expansion goes up to 138, the health exchange goes up to 400. It would look as though all those that would be eligible for MIA could be otherwise relieved by another program, but we still have to drill down on another consideration. Because in the MIA program, we have an obligation to consider an applicant's ability to pay, and the health exchange, there are premiums involved, so we have to look at what are those income levels in terms of what is it affordable. So we've looked at the net premium, in considering the subsidy and the net deductible, and compared it to the MIA program with a share of cost. And we believe that we meet that ability to pay test because the health exchange is comparable or less expensive to an individual than the MIA with a share of cost.
Repeat that one more time. I'm sorry. Repeat that last portion.
When we look at, when we set the income limits for the MIA program, we had to consider the individual's income level, and if we just look at the exchange and say, okay, well they go up to 400, that's higher than ours, we have to make sure that the cost for somebody to purchase the exchange is within those income limits that we've got in our program. Does that?
Yeah.
So the ability to pay, that affordability test. So while there are differences, monthly share of cost, an applicant has only if they receive services in the month. That's a little different than how an annual deductible works. Well, we've compared that, for an individual who is paying a share of cost, is receiving services, paying a share of cost, comparing that to what if they purchase the health exchange at their income level, what would the subsidy be? If it's low enough, there would also be an extra cost-sharing deduction that brings down effectively their deductible. So we're looking at, okay, what would that out of cost, you know, out of pocket, what would that cost be for the individual compared to the MIA program? And it's comparable or less than if you were paying the MIA share of costs. So we believe that looking at that, it does meet that ability to pay. It's within what we already looked at in terms of the income necessary and that limit for the MIA program. Is that more clear?
Yeah.
Sort of?
I'm sorry.
Please.
So you make that analysis just to kind of support the premise that these MIAs will be going to the Medi-Cal. Is that kind of why you say that, just to try to support that?
If we were to say that you're otherwise relieved, either for Medi-Cal or if your income is higher for the health exchange, we'd have to be able to say that you really are otherwise relieved. It's not going to cost you any more than what those income limits are that we've set in order to say that.
Okay. And this ties right back to the $3 million plus that we're not going to receive. This is the component of savings that they're expecting, or that the state had expected us to save. How's that an MIA cost?
Right. I mean, you know, the state was taking that position. The counties are going to have so few indigent.
I noticed the number doesn't equal that, though. But anyways, we haven't quite.
Let me just add that I think those are two separate issues with regard to the amount of less funds received from the state. And what I think, Mary Ann, is it's a very difficult subject to try to get your hands on. My best way of thinking about it is we want to make sure that a person who is currently MIA, who's going to go off MIA, actually has enough money to afford purchasing the insurance from the exchange. And that's why we've prepared very, very careful calculations as to what we think that exact cost would be. So we don't have people out there who say, well, that's really nice, I'd like to purchase insurance on the exchange, but if I do, I won't be able to eat, I won't be able to pay my mortgage or other bills.
And I think my point is that the savings, and I understand, because yes, it's, we are still the payer of last resort, but the savings doesn't equal what the state is anticipating us to save in this component, mm-hmm, which just goes back to the same argument that they're just transferring more obligations to the county. Anyways, go ahead.
That's
continue.
Okay. That's always correct.
You can always say that one.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay, we can go to the next slide. Okay, so in terms of, with all that information, in terms of trying to develop a recommendation, we look at, okay, well, what is our obligation, and consider that otherwise relieved component. We look at what you just referred to, the dollars the state is taking back. I mean, we know that we have to manage, we have a mandate we have to meet, but we have to manage this really well given the resources available. But we're also looking at this as this is a tremendous change that we're going through right now with what is being launched January 1, and looking at how different this is, and are those that would be impacted aware? Do they, take some time to kind of understand and learn what is covered California, what is the health exchange, Medi-Cal expansion, and there's a fair amount of sort of uncertainties and known knowns. We're going into kind of new territory next year, in terms of how many will be enrolling. What are all those issues that we don't yet know yet because we're not there? So with that in mind, what we're recommending is sort of an eased-in approach, looking at the exchange as being an opportunity to be otherwise relieved, but recognizing the situation that we're in right now, what the environment is, and this is so new, that in order to be sure that we're meeting our mandate and that we're giving the community appropriate, adequate time to understand what's available, understand what's expected, understand what the consequences are of those expectations, we are proposing that to correspond with the launch of the health exchange product opportunity, that the policy be that effective January 1, when this starts, that we acknowledge that the health exchange is available to this population, and that if you fail to enroll or maintain your enrollment, you're not eligible for the MIA program. That just as an overall policy statement with regard to this new program, but considering how new it is, considering that it's an open enrollment period and then it closes, and you, unless there's a life event, much like employer-sponsored care, that you can't apply until that next year, that we'd ask that you consider the calendar year 2014 a transition year and allow us to waive that policy. But by setting the policy right from the beginning, it sets that expectation. It gives us the direction to target all of our communication, that we're encouraging them to get on the exchange, that MIA is not going to be an option in the future. And then, after that 1 year runs out, when the open enrollment begins in the fall of 14 for the coverage period January 1, 2015, the waiver would have expired, that unless there is a good cause exception, unless there's a good cause reason why you're not enrolled in the exchange, that if you're eligible for the exchange, you're not eligible. If you're eligible, whether you've enrolled or not or kept, you would not be eligible for the MIA program. Okay, and I think this is probably what you're referring to in terms of the savings. This is really, we recognize that these estimates are really broad, because it goes to, when we do a recommendation that has to do with statistics and data of past utilization, we can come up with estimates that are based on that. A lot of what we're looking at here is an unknown area. So, we're saying, we said that about 90% of our MIA population will gain Medi-Cal eligibility. Well, that would leave 10%, but we don't know, with all of this activity, are more applicants going to come out? Are we going to have more that before hadn't applied? So, admittedly, the estimate is kind of wide, 900 to 1,700 individuals, and a financial impact of $1 to $3 million annually. Of course, probably we wouldn't see that till 2015 because of the way we're trying to ease into this. Okay, so I've covered 1, 2, 3. Now we're on to the fourth area of proposed change, and this has to do with scope of benefits, specifically around the dental services. We have an obligation to cover medically necessary dental services and to look to the Medi-Cal program. Doesn't mean we have to be exact, and we haven't in the past, but we need to look to the Medi-Cal program in setting the scope of benefits. So we've looked at we've compared the dental scope of the adult dental benefits that are about to be restored in Medi-Cal. And we compared them to, code by code, compared them to the services that are that we've been covering under the MIA program, and ours is a little bit more extensive. So we're asking that you allow us to reduce what we're covering to really match what the Medi-Cal adult dental benefits are. And from what I'm understanding, when we look at what those differences are, It's more like there might be four different codes that are slightly different in treatment for a particular problem, and some are covered and some are not. So it's not as though we're saying, no, that just wouldn't be treatment. It's just what types of treatment is covered. In terms of trying to estimate the impact, we estimate that in looking at dental utilization, we believe that would be about 180 to 340 individuals annually that would be impacted. And the financial savings isn't real large, but $7,000 to $13,000 annually. Okay, before moving on to the recommendations, just a couple of comments that I wanted to make. Because of these recommendations, because they involve reducing or eliminating a direct service provided by the county, they are subject to a hearing. And with advance notice requirements. And I want you to know that those notices were posted right after you set this hearing back on October 15th. So we've met that requirement. And then in early October, there was a health executive committee of your board, and that committee supported today's recommendations. Okay, so moving to the staff recommendations, and I think I probably shortened a couple of these from what's in the printed item. First, to conduct that public hearing that's required, we ask that you approve the elimination of the direct provision of pharmacy and oncology services and authorize us to negotiate and execute the alternative contracts so that, to ensure that we're meeting that our mandate for those MIA patients. Third, that you establish that MIA eligibility policy that would consider that an applicant who fails to enroll or keep enrollment in the exchange without good cause would not be eligible for the MIA program, but authorize that one-year waiver for the calendar year 2014, where we would allow those individuals to have MIA eligibility, and then approve the reduction of the MIA dental scope of benefits to mirror the Medi-Cal dental scope of benefits. And then with regard to the staffing, we're asking you to approve the reduction in force of those seven filled full-time positions, to delete three vacant full-time positions, to transfer one filled full-time position, and then to delete the job classifications of outpatient pharmacy manager, pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, and to be effective on January 11, 2014, with that one exception that I mentioned earlier, that would be January 18th, 2014. And I want to mention that, you know, this is a dynamic environment right now, and we continue to talk with employees, and there may be a need for adjustment on the effective dates. If that occurs, we'll return to your board with a consent item prior to the effective date, asking for your approval of that. And then the last recommendation is to amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect these changes with those effective dates. And with that, I'll stop and ask that you conduct the public hearing, and we'll answer any questions that you have.
First, do we have any questions of staff? I wanted to ask a question because it looks like to me that, like, pre-enrolling the MIA that are eligible for Medi-Cal, because we keep looking at these percentages, but getting them, since there's this snapshot for them to go on, what has been our outreach so far to try and get these folks so we don't miss the opportunity, so they don't stay on MIA for this 14-15 year? And do you understand the
yes.
question?
Okay. A variety of methods of outreach. In letters with the applicants where we have face-to-face encounters. We've been working with the Community Services Agency for quite a while in terms of sharing eligibility information. We also, in the MIA program, changed to using the Medi-Cal application document so that there may be some of those MIA applicants that, because we've collected all the information that CSA needs to determine Medi-Cal eligibility, they may be able to determine eligibility without even a face-to-face encounter with that applicant. We're working in our clinic system. Any chance we have to interact with the individuals, we're working with the hospitals, with community-based organizations. Trying to be sure that, you know, every opportunity to communicate and spread the word and raise awareness that we're doing that. This is critical from a financial standpoint. Clearly, we have to manage this well, but we also don't want patients caught in the middle of this. We don't want an interruption of care and services. So we're reaching out. You know, we're working with the health plans too to try to make sure that any of the transition of care that we're being proactive about that, so that this is as smooth. You know, this is a big change, but it's as smooth as we can possibly make it.
It seems at all those locations, every time you have an interaction with someone, we should be collecting the information, checking to see if they're eligible, just forwarding it. And I think that's good to hear. This is a question that probably doesn't have a lot of bearing, but it might in the end. The Medi-Cal folks, now using our pharmacy, 94% of the prescriptions were going to MIA. Medi-Cal, we're not using it. Medi-Cal, we get reimbursed for some of the medication, right? Through there, is that MIA we pay for 100%?
We're responsible for 100% of the cost for the MIA patients.
So the fact that the Medi-Cal folks are choosing, you had said it's more convenient for them, but I can't imagine that's 100% of the case. Is Walgreens cheaper or more expensive cost versus our pharmacy on Medi-Cal, or has it been? Do you know?
Well, for the for the individual, the costs are based on fee schedules. So I don't think that is really a part of that. I mean, if you look at location on the scenic campus, we have the pediatric medical office and we have the specialty services, but all the other adult primary care offices aren't there at Scenic. They're at other locations.
Yeah.
So the distance perhaps from one's home or from where they're receiving, getting that prescription from a doctor, maybe closer to another, likely is closer to another option than our pharmacy.
Okay. Supervisor DeMartini?
I'm not clear just what a 340B, federally approved buying arrangement really is. And is Walgreens the only company that has that? I mean, there's pharmacies like Rite Aid or CVS. Do they have that status also, or what is it exactly?
There are only particular organizations that have access under federal law to access this federal purchasing, this discount purchasing program. FQHCs have access. Nonprofit hospitals, if they can show that they are providing care to the underserved in the community, then they also can have access to the 340B purchasing. I believe Memorial and Emmanuel benefit from that, where DMC wouldn't have eligibility because they're a for-profit organization. I don't believe that Walgreens is the only. But I don't know specifically. I think CVS may, Rite Aid may. I would imagine that the larger pharmaceutical companies the larger pharmaceutical companies are more likely to have this pre-approved federal arrangement in place than the smaller pharmacies. And while when we look at the number of scripts that we'll be responsible for, I think it will be small. We could work with any pharmacy organization, any pharmacy company that has the access to that 340B discount purchasing arrangement.
But you're asking us to just approve the agreement only with Walgreens today, or anybody that has this 340B status?
At this point, to ensure that we have, because we've been talking with Walgreens, we already have an arrangement with Walgreens. Not where we're paying them, but where they have this virtual inventory arrangement for the 340B purchasing. So we'd be adding this to that relationship. But if another pharmacy company wanted to serve our MIA patients, we could enter an agreement with them as well. So we're asking that you'd authorize us to have the ability to enter an agreement or agreements. With pharmacy organizations that have this federal pre-approved 340B arrangement.
Is that all? Supervisor DeMartini, is that all?
Yeah, that's it. I just never heard of this, the 340B, and you can go into an agreement with other pharmacies, but where is that at in the staff recommendations?
Recommendation number 2, the latter part.
I guess I should look at the actual.
Okay, well, it's a little vague, but as long as we're just not limited to one company is my only concern.
Any other questions of staff? Okay, this is a public hearing. We'll open the public hearing. Mr. Montalengo, this is your opportunity. Sorry you had to wait.
Morning.
Morning.
I just want to come and I'm very thankful for the time I've been able to work as a pharmacist for the county. I grew up dirt poor. We came, there's 11 of us, in the family. We came here to follow the crops and work in the fields, and I couldn't even speak English, so they flunked me second grade. So for me to be able to serve as a pharmacist has been such an honor, And when I work, when I serve the public, I can relate. You know, I know what it is to be poor. I know what it is to be uneducated. So it's just been an enjoyable time for me to work here at the pharmacy for the county. And I just want to thank you for that. There was a time when we lost our manager, and I was asked to, well, the state board came in and they wanted to shut it down. They had to shut it down. It's legal. And so I stepped up and let them use my license to keep it open. And I know that there's a lot of financial burdens on the county. So I don't really want to ask for anything. I just want to thank you for the time that you allowed us to work for the county.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Just one thing on the Medi-Cal. Has anybody researched what the Medi-Cal benefits are providing? You want to downsize MIA, what you provided for MIA, which was actually more in some areas. And it's just amazing because the people that use these services don't have the ability to do research. They don't really have the opportunity to think about what's available out there. And Medi-Cal has downsized their benefits. They've, you know, dropped podiatry, and dental was the one thing that you had that was very beneficial for the people that were without funding, because that's a service that everybody needs at some point. And Medi-Cal, I don't think, do you know exactly what Medi-Cal covers on dental? I think it's a very reduced rate of coverage.
Currently, Medi-Cal covers dental for children, but several years back, the state had pulled back the adult dental, but that's being restored in the spring.
Awesome.
Under Medi-Cal.
Awesome. Thank you.
Deborah, could you state your name for the record again? I'm sorry.
My name is Deborah Harper.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board for discussion and action. Supervisor.
I know this is hard. It's always hard when we have to eliminate positions. And so it's tough for us. We're supposed to be stewards here of the taxpayers' dollars and kind of prudent investors with those dollars. And so, but it's never easy when we have to eliminate positions. But it's something that we have to do. All that's going on here with all the changes in the Affordable Care Act has kind of put us in this spot. And as Supervisor Chiesa said, we always end up on the losing end of these things with the state. But we have to, like I said, as prudent investors of the taxpayers' dollars, do these things. So we're sorry that we have to do this. We very much appreciate your comments for your time here. We worked with the county. But it's part of, unfortunately, what we've had to do over the last few years often, and never pleasant for us to do. I also, with regard to the oncology, I want to thank the doctors, our doctors Dollywall and Levy, for them kind of stepping up and kind of giving back to the community and taking on some of these patients. So that's been something that's been very helpful for us, and they're going to continue to do. So. Yeah, I support these recommendations as hard as they are for all of us here.
Thank you. Comments?
I don't want any comments about the Affordable Care Act. I'm just going to let it go.
Okay. I guess I will comment. And it's been about a year when the state decided that $300 million was a target that they threw out. And it was an educated guess as to what they were going to recoup from the counties, and looking at how difficult it's been for our staff to try and come up with a number, gave us two options. You had to dig down deep to decide on an option that had to be chosen, and now we are here standing before you, not necessarily on the pharmacy side, but on the Medi-Cal side, trying to still figure out which, when you're talking about, you know, probably $2 million is going to be our savings. If it's 1 to 3, somewhere in that neighborhood, we have a shortfall. And we continue to turn over every stone to try and become more efficient, more effective. We are stewards. Supervisor Withrow had talked about being stewards. These are difficult decisions. We hope we're making the right one. I mean, you know, when we look at some of these things, They're educated guesses, very educated. The more time we have, the more educated they become, but we still don't know the numbers. So I'm going to support all of these two. The state has been an easy target for us as of late, but most of the time it's warranted. It truly is. If they had spent as much time or they had waited to see what the savings is, this would be better for all of us. And that's for all 510,000 residents of Stanislaus County, not just the medically indigent, but for all of us. So I will, again, support this. It's with a heavy heart. I can tell you, Mr. Montelongo, thank you for your service. We are our employees. That's what makes us as an organization. It's very difficult for us to do this, but we thank you. So with that, I will entertain a motion.
So move.
Have a motion. Supervisor Monteith.
I will second that.
Supervisor Withrow. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Thank you, guys. Okay, no more public hearings. We will be going back to item B3, consideration and approval of the first quarter financial report for fiscal year 2013-2014 and related action. CEO Risen.
All right. Good morning, board members. We come to you once a quarter to provide you a financial update of how we're doing. The first quarter tends to be the briefest of our reports because it's awful early in the year, and a lot of times we don't have enough discretionary revenue in at this point of the year to really get a good prediction of how we're looking. But we do monitor also departmental revenue and departmental expenses, and I can tell you that things appear to be on track with the recommended final budget that you just approved back in September. I want to acknowledge the efforts of a tremendous budget team we have, and being led very capably by Cynthia Tomlinson, and she's going to be leading out in our presentation this morning, assisted by Tara Chumley and David Jones, who prepared our PowerPoint. So my thanks to all our departments for the good work you do, as well as our budget team, and at this point I'll turn it over to you, Cindy.
Thank you, Stan. Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, board members Mr. Risen and Mr. Burrows. I would also like to echo our thanks to the board for your guidance through this process. Excuse me. And I'd like to particularly thank Mr. Risen for his exemplary leadership to our budget team. The first quarter report is intended to review and assure that we are on track at the beginning of the fiscal year and to make any necessary financial recommendations. This year's report continues to be organized around your board's 7 priority areas, as you can see on the screen in front of you. As a quick recap, the 2013-2014 adopted final budget that you approved last September totaled over $1.04 billion. Throughout the report, you will notice that we analyze what we refer to as the operating budget. In addition to what you approved as part of the final budget, the operating budget includes any spending authority carried over from last year, as well as any changes you've approved since the final budget. The first quarter report before you today includes recommendations for increased appropriations totaling $446,953 and increases in estimated revenue of $404,551, resulting in the increased use of fund balance retained earnings of just over $42,000. As of September 30th, 2013, discretionary revenue appears to be on track with first quarter receipts of $8.6 million. At this time, only 1 month of sales and use tax revenues have been received, and we won't have property tax dollars until at least December. So those were our primary sources of discretionary revenue, and that's why we have such a small percentage at this point. It is still too early to determine if changes are necessary, so we will continue to closely monitor and analyze actual behavior, and will return as part of the mid-year financial report with detailed updates. Moving on to the priority areas, in the safe community priority, an overall decrease of $54,000 in appropriations is recommended. In the district attorney budget, a decrease of $54,000 is recommended in the impaired driver vertical prosecution program to reflect the actual grant amount awarded by the U.S. Department of Transportation National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. These funds enable the district attorney to prosecute alcohol and drug-involved driving under the influence cases, which result in death or injury, as well as cases involving habitual driving under the influence offenders. In a healthy community, there is an overall increase of $219,000 recommended. In the Department of Aging and Veteran Services, an increase in appropriations of just over $93,000 is recommended for the Area Agency on Aging, along with increased estimated revenue of $51,000 to reflect an allocation of one-time funding from the California Department of Aging. These funds for the Senior Meals Program can be used for equipment purchases only. The purchases will be made by the current service provider on behalf of the program and will remain with the program in the event of a change in service provider. The increased use of $42,000 in departmental fund balance will allow the department to return to the state one-time funds received in fiscal year 12-13 but not expended. Also in the Aging and Veterans Department, an increase of approximately $61,000 is in appropriations and estimated revenue is recommended for the Veterans Services Office, funded by a one-time increase to the Veterans Service Officer allocations as part of the 2013-2014 state budget. These funds will enable the department to hire an extra help veteran service representative to assist in decreasing the wait time for claims preparation and processing currently experienced by our veterans. The department will also provide outreach to skilled nursing facilities and to seniors in outlying areas of the county to ensure qualified veterans are aware of services available to them. It is recommended to add one Director of Volunteer Services position funded by existing appropriations to be shared by the Prevention and Early Intervention Senior Peer Counseling Friendly Visitor Program and the California Department of Aging Health Insurance Counseling and Advocacy Program to assist with recruiting and maintaining the volunteer workforce for both of those programs. It is also recommended to add one Mental Health Clinician 1 position funded by existing appropriations through the Prevention and Early Intervention Program to provide program oversight and supervision and mental health counseling services to older adults who are experiencing depression. In the Behavioral Health and Recovery Services Department, it is recommended to double fill one Manager 2 position for up to 8 weeks. The existing Manager 2 heads the contract division in the department and is responsible for administering and renewing approximately 300 contracts annually. These include independent contracts, memorandums of understanding, provider agreements, and many others. The contract renewal process typically occurs largely between March and June of each year, and the double fill period will allow the incumbent manager to fully train a new manager for that work. The estimated cost of the double fill position is approximately $15,000 and will be funded from salary savings from vacant positions within the department. In the Community Services Agency, it is recommended to increase appropriations and estimated revenue by $64,680. The Community Services Agency participates in the statewide Automated Welfare Systems Consortium 4 project as part of Region 4. This region consists of the counties of Stanislaus, Napa, Marin, and San Joaquin. This funding will allow the department to add one new manager, one position, to act as the project manager, to coordinate communications and business processes across this region. The position rotates between the member counties with a minimum 3-year commitment. Also in the Community Services Agency, and this gets back to the question that the chairman asked in the previous public hearing, the department is asking to modify its work hours of operations specifically for StanWorks Division, which is charged with Medi-Cal eligibility determination for county residents. The department is working with the Health Services Agency to enroll current MIA medically indigent adult customers into Medi-Cal as part of health care reform. The recommended expanded hours would include Saturdays in the months of November and December of 2013 from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. During these times, the agency will hold a series of health care reform enrollment events to assist residents with the application process. And these events would occur at the Community Services Agency facility as well as their current outstations. Other agencies, including Kaiser, HealthNet, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Health Plan of San Joaquin, will participate in these events to assist customers in their health plan selection decision. In the Health Services Agency, it is recommended to transfer one staff services analyst position from the clinics and ancillary services budget to the public health budget. This position will act as a gatekeeper for data collection and assist in various management reports, as well as conduct periodic workload audits for the public health programs. The funding for this position is included in the public health budget for fiscal year 13-14. At this time, I will turn the presentation over to Ms. Chumley, who will finish it for us.
Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, board members, Mr. Eisen, Mr. Burrows. My name is Tara Chumley with the Chief Executive Office. In the strong local economy priority area, an overall increase of $213,750 in appropriations is recommended. For the Alliance WorkNet budget, an increase in appropriations and estimated revenue in the amount of $213,750 is recommended for the award of a Youth Career Technical Education Grant. This is in partnership with the Ceres Unified School District Project YES. The funding will provide occupational skills training guided by the Manufacturing Skills Standard Council, work experience, on-the-job training, supportive services, and educational support to about 50 youth. In the efficient delivery of public services priority area, an overall increase of over $68,000 in appropriations is recommended. For the auditor controller, as a result of a recent reorganization, a request to delete 4 vacant unfunded positions is being recommended. The department has identified that they no longer need these positions due to a recent restructuring. In the Chief Executive Office, a realignment of existing appropriations within fixed assets is recommended for the Psychiatric Health Facility Capital Project budget. This transfer will align existing appropriations with the construction contract for the Psychiatric Health Facility Capital Project that was awarded by your board on October 1st. A recommendation to reclassify an existing Confidential Assistant 3 position upward to Confidential Assistant 4 in the Chief Executive Office Capital Projects Division is being made, funded by the project budget. In light of the complex projects underway that are anticipated to continue for a minimum of 5 years, a need for higher levels of support has been identified. It is also recommended to restore an unfunded Manager 2 position and reclassify upward to a Manager 3 to serve as the budget manager for the Risk Management Division. Since inception of the county's medical self-insurance program, the financial responsibilities have expanded significantly. A current extra help budget manager will convert to full-time to fill this position. The difference in the position cost will be funded by existing appropriations this fiscal year and through departmental charges in future years. The clerk recorder's office has begun their office remodel and has identified a need for additional cameras. It is recommended that the existing appropriations be transferred to fixed assets for this purchase. In the 2013-14 adopted final budget, the Sheriff Court security budget was transferred out of the general fund and into the special revenue fund. This resulted in a change to the way charges are accounted for, and a technical adjustment is required. It is recommended to increase appropriations and estimated revenue by over $27,000 in the auditor controller budget, $790 in Board of Supervisors budget, $34,000 in CEO Operations and Services, and $6,000 in the CEO Risk Management budget to support the technical adjustment. On July 30, 2013, the Board approved the assessments for the county service areas and the associated engineers' reports, which identified the use of $82,500 of capital reserves for the Salida Sidewalk Project. The adopted proposed budget included the use of $25,000 of capital reserves for this project, and therefore it is recommended to increase appropriations by $57,500 for the County Service Area 10 Salida Parks. For staffing, the total current authorized positions are 3,931. Recommended in the first quarter financial report are 3 new positions and to restore 1 unfunded position. This brings the total recommended position to 3,935. The county's budget can be viewed on our website at www.stancounty.com as indicated. Before you are six staff recommendations for your consideration today. One, accept the Chief Executive Officer's first quarter financial report for fiscal year 2013-14. Authorize the Chief Executive Officer and the Auditor Controller to make the necessary adjustments as recommended in the first quarter financial report. Third, approve an increase in appropriations in County Service Area 10 Salida Parks budget of $57,500 for the Salida Parks project. Four, approve the modification of hours of operation in the Stanworks Division of the Community Services Agency to include 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. on all Saturdays during the months of November and December of this year. Five, amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect the recommendations included as part of this first quarter financial report and as outlined in the staffing impact section of this report and detailed in Attachment B to be effective the start of the November 16th pay period unless otherwise noted. And finally, approve contracts and or agreements listed on Attachment C in cumulative amounts of $100,000 or greater since July 1, 2011. That concludes our presentation, and staff is available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of staff? Any questions from the audience? Chief Bradley, he's going to make his way up here. How are you? Okay. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for comments and action.
Okay. No comments. I will make a motion. Oh, sorry, Jim, you got to.
Yeah, just comment. I mean, I think that the changes are relatively minor, and I can support the staff recommendations. This is, considering we have a billion-dollar budget, these are extremely minor changes. The only question I had, really, you know, I'm going to go ahead and support the staff recommendations, is the auditor's department deleting four positions. It was just not over a year ago that we were told that the auditor's department was understaffed, couldn't keep up with the workload. I see now they want to delete four positions. I would assume that they're all right with this, but I don't know what's changed.
The auditor's department did make the request to delete. These are unfunded vacant positions, and they have recently done a reorganization of their existing staff and positions and have determined they no longer need these.
Mm. Okay, well, if that's what they determine, I guess I'm okay with it. It's unusual for a department to ask for a reduction in
Lauren staff. Klein, Auditor Controller. These were unfunded positions, and we don't have the budget to fund them. And over the last 3 years, we've done great restructuring in the department. And moving forward, we don't need those positions. Things have changed so much that what we really need are, there may be requests in the future for different classifications once we get the fund, if we ever have any funding to fill other positions. So it's a difference between funded positions and unfunded. These were unfunded positions that we don't have funding for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. As you're pretty much done with the successor agencies now and all the paperwork that's involved with that.
No, we're still dealing with with all those issues. There's new ones as the DOF keeps creating changes to the ROPs. So, no, we're still.
You're still at it. I know I'm on three of those successor agencies. And
Jim, I think it's just a testament about accountants and CPAs and how strong they are.
Absolutely. I'm glad you said that, Terry. I was going to bring that up.
Good job.
Okay, that's all I have.
Okay. If not, accept a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Thank you. Motion?
I'll second it.
Motion and a second. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion again carries 5-0. Thank you very much. Okay. We're going to move on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the San Joaquin County Superintendent of Schools regarding the annual review of the John B. Allard Community School, the Ceres Community School, and the Empire Community School per the Williams Settlement Regulations.
Refer to the Stanislaus County Superintendent of Schools.
This board has received a letter from the State Fish and Game Commission regarding regulatory action relative to the enhancement on private land management.
Refer to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a copy of the first quarter financial report from Form F for the period of July 1st, 2013 through September 30th, 2013 from the Gallo Center for the Arts.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office. Board of Supervisors report, Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I just want to remind everybody today is Election Day, and you should go out and exercise your right to vote. And I will be down at the Register of Voters office tonight to be sure that the election runs fair and orderly, which it always has in the past. I don't expect it's going to be any different this time, but I'll be there just in case.
Thank you. And I know that we feel much better when you're there since you've done this many, many times.
Yeah, I've lost count of how many times, but it's an interesting process, and I'd like to be part of it, observing anyway.
Any other Board of Supervisor reports? I would like to welcome Chief Bradley. Thank you for coming to our meeting today. He is the Chief of the Modesto Regional Fire Authority, in case you didn't know. Okay, do we have a legislative fiscal management report?
I have no report this morning.
Okay, we do have a closed session.
The board will be meeting in closed session for a conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation. There's one case, James Britt versus Stanislaus County et al., Stanislaus County Superior Court case number 675652, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D1, and we do not anticipate anything to report out.
And I'd like to thank Mr. Burrows for stepping in on short notice for Jack Doring, who's a little under the weather. If there's nothing else for the good of the order, this meeting is adjourned.